Before we begin, let us take a moment to worship the Supreme One, the infinitely compassionate One, the Lord Buddha, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times, all together and with me. Namo tas bhagavato arhato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. What is the most important thing? Well, one of the most important things, at least. On our journey to Nibbana, on our journey to Nibbana, what is one of the most important things? Now, number one, we know we need merits. We know we need a teacher. But there's something else neither merits nor teacher can give. Okay. So happiness, but more importantly, this is something that helps you get there. That is the, you can almost say, the thing or the glue that keeps all these things together, teacher and merits. Now, if you look at it, everything is connected, but one thing is always, something has to start it, right? And it's always one helps the other helps one. So you can't really say where it started, but you can say one of the most important things on our journey to Nibbana, or our journey to our own liberation, is our environment. It's our environment. Nice. So our environment is one of the most important things. Now, we say, you know, every time we do a Buddha Puja, what do we say? We say, Imina Punya Kamena Mame Bhava Samagam. Right? Saying, by the power of these merits, may I not have the association of ignoble, immoral people. Now, what does it mean to associate? And what does it mean to have unnoble and unmoral, immoral people? What is this? Because we, every Buddha Puja, right, at near the ending, we say, Imina Punya Kammena Mame Bala Samagum. Why? What is that? It is the thing that glues both merits and teachers to you. Because what we have to remember, when we're talking about, you know, we say with our words that, you know, it's not to associate immoral, unknowable people. But what are we actually saying here? We're talking about the environment. The environment is one of the most important things. And I have proof. I have proof of how different an environment, or how an environment can change a person. So I have a letter here that I would like to read to you, given by a child. A child who, you know, lives a completely normal life outside the monastery, going to an international school. But he writes a letter because his school had organized a small, you can say almost a trip to the monastery. And by the end of it, this child had this great need to write a letter, right? Almost an article about the monastery. And he asked, and he gave it to me, and I said, can I read this to all of you? And he said, of course. So I do want to read this, but I want to first explain how important environment is. I really want to explain how important environment is. You see, at each and every moment, our environment changes. Our environment, just like everything else in this world, is not fixed. Our environment, just like everything else in this world, is not fixed. Now, when we say environment, we're not just talking about, you know, the place. Because every place is the same. For example, what is the difference between your house and this hall? It's made from bricks, made from cement, right? I don't know, paint. Your house is also made from what? Bricks, cement, paint. Your house also has windows, these have windows. So the environment's not just the building. And the environment is not even, you know, the externalness as well. What I mean is, it doesn't mean nature. It doesn't mean, you know, we have to be in a secluded area, right? Surrounded by, you know, the serene green nature. We're going to be under trees. That's not the environment we're talking about. See, the environment that we're talking about is the people that we associate. The people that we associate. See, we have to always understand that I am what? I'm what? I am an illusion. This sense of this feeling of I is an illusion. It's something that your mind creates. And with a sense of I, you feel this sense of control. I can control who I am. I have the ability to be whoever I want to be. But is that so? Can you be whoever you want to be? Or are you just the effect of your environment, of the people you associate? Now, back many, many months back, we talked about the five people you associate. We talked about how important it is to actually find out and discover and analyze these five people. Who are these five people that you closely associate? Because these five people are going to determine who you are. And not only that, dangerously, it can also determine who you become. Dangerously, it can determine who you become. Depending on who you associate, you will change. You will change according to them, they will change according to you, until you find this balance. Good. So for example, see, you can't really label someone and say these are good people, these are bad people, because there's no one in this world that you can say with 100% certainty, unless they are a Buddha Shravaka, that they are 100% good. Well, technically, even a Buddha Shravaka, unless they are arahants, can make mistakes. But even arahants themselves can make mistakes. So no being is perfect. Well, except the perfect one. Apart from that, no being is perfect. So we can't really label someone to be good. So, you know, a very common question that we all have is, who should we associate? I know this because I myself and lots of other people ask the same question. Who is the good to associate? So we normally go to our teachers and we ask our teacher, you know, who should I be associating? It's never about who. We should never ask ourselves, who should we associate? Because if we ask ourselves who, we're basically saying that, you know, these good qualities belong to who? Belong to a certain individual. And only that individual. For example, say person A is very compassionate. Then if we say, you know, who should I associate? I should associate person A because they're compassionate. We are saying that person A has compassion. Actually, compassion is there. Kindness is there. But when we say, who should I associate? Which person should I associate? We're saying that this person has this quality. Now, of course they do. But this quality is also what? Tell me one person that you know is good 100% of the time. One person that you know who is good 100% of the time. We can't say that. We can't say, you know, this person is always good. Neither can you say this person is always bad. But we can statistically say, you know, this person has a tendency to be good. And we can say this person has a tendency to be bad. Now, our environment can change accordingly. So if your associations or if your environment is people and ideas and thoughts that constantly challenge you, puts yourself into a challenging situation where, you know, you're not in your comfort zones. That means you will become someone who, you know, tries to overcome that challenge, tries to do better, tries to, you know, contemplate more, tries to contemplate on what they feel is hard. But if your environment's always in your comfort zone, you know, doing the things that you like, away from the people that, you know, will tell you off. I mean, it's a very normal behavior to fall back on your comfort zones. Because that becomes your environment. For example, we don't like being told that we're wrong. We don't like being told that we're wrong. So what do? We associate people that tell us we're right. We associate people to tell us that, oh, what you're doing is okay. I do the same thing. Because we don't like when people go against the ideas that we have. And therefore, we don't associate them. Bringing ourselves into our own comfort zone. Something you have to ask yourself, right, is there's always a person in your life that constantly gives you advice, constantly shows your mistakes. I would like you to think, how do you enjoy being in their presence? Sometimes yes, sometimes no, like I, you know, not today, maybe another day, not today. Because why? It makes you feel what? It makes you feel that, you know, I don't know, they know, I don't know. Or they're telling you to do something that goes beyond your comfort. You know, today, I want you to go and worship 5 monks today. Your comfort zone, it goes beyond your comfort zone, so you think, no, I don't like associating that person. And you build this environment where you're stuck in the same loop. Again, it's your own environment. It's your own environment. Now, luckily, we are all of us today are in an environment where we are all here to help one another to attain nirvana, you know, to understand, to help them in any sort of way, to accumulate as many merits as they possibly can. We're in an environment like that. But even in this environment, your environment can be different. Your environment at this moment can be different. Even though right now you're sat in front of a Swami Nanda who's giving a sermon or whatnot, even at this moment, your environment can be different. How? You know, at home, I think, you know, for dinner, I really want to have this. Or, you know, it's raining. Did I put the clothes in? Oh, will it be? Oh no, I forgot to put my clothes in, so it's gonna become wet when I come home. So even while in an environment where, you know, it's so perfect it's the best environment for you to contemplate and go forward. Even at that moment, you're in a different environment. Now, we can't control that. That's not in our control. But you can say, then is there no point of being in an environment like this? There is. Because every time, say, we're talking and you hear this, your attention comes back to this. So for example, let's say you get a chance to go to the Valley Maluwa and start contemplating. And your mind is going here and there, you know. Normally when we will meditate, our mind doesn't stay in one place. Especially at the beginning. It will go one place to another, to what you did yesterday, what you're going to do tomorrow, you know, X, Y, and Z. But because you're in that environment, you'll see and feel different stimuluses. For example, you're sat down and you're thinking about something irrelevant, something that's not conducive for your nibbana. And then someone walks in front of you, saying, excuse me, and they walk in front of you. That moment, that brings you back to what? Oh, I'm in the Valley Maluwa. What should I be doing? I have to contemplate. And now you're going back to that environment. So your environment is essential, is always essential. Without an environment, nibbana cannot happen. I can guarantee it. Just like you can say, without merits, you can't attain nibbana. Without a teacher, you cannot attain nibbana. Without the environment, you cannot attain nibbana. The environment is the most important thing. Is the most important thing. So I really wanted to read this, I want to call it a letter, but it's more like an article, right, that this child had written. And I think this child is in grade 7, right? Only in grade 7. And this is the first time he's ever been to the monastery. Now think about the environment that you have created. You have created that helps another person feel this way. Okay. So the title is Our Journey to the Monastery, Blessing in the Rain. Imagine a place where there is so much peace that no suffering can squeeze through, and a place which you can call paradise. A place where not only people, but also animal seem to know no fear only, peace and a sense of everlasting. First time he's in the monastery, right? What does he feel? He feels, right? A place where there's so much peace, no suffering that can squeeze through a place, and you can call paradise. Now, we can call this paradise because, you know, we live and breathe in this place. But someone, a child, a grade 7 child, comes and says what? I feel that this is like paradise. Now, where does that feeling come from? The bricks. The color of the wall, it's white. White automatically gives a sense of peace. Where does that come from? Environment. Environment from where? The environment each and every one of you have created for them. Now, it's very easy to say, you know what, it's all just almost like an illusion because, you know, I didn't do anything. I was just there, and then, you know, I just saw these children go by. That's it. Do you know the power of a smile? Of a simple thing that we do, a smile. The power of a smile is incredible. Just seeing someone smile, you yourself feel like what? The need to smile. Just seeing a smile makes you smile. Because that creates the environment for what? A smile. And then he says, well then, you're talking about the Jethavanarama Buddhist Monastery. I was handed the opportunity by the Dhamma School, so the school has a Dhamma School, to visit it on the 6th of April 2025, so last month. It's not a typical monastery, hidden behind the towering mountains and the endless beauty of the greenery, flourishing in nature. The monastery lies far away from the rush of modern life. In the Jethavanarama Buddhist Monastery, extraordinary activities lie in wait for whoever enters. In our journey, we can achieve some incre- in our journey, we could achieve some incredible activities, such as washing and drying the monks' feet, washing the alms bowl, handing over Pirikara, and tidying up the monastery, gifting many merits to everyone who participated. Well, we have to remember, these are once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. I mean, for most of us, this is very common. But for someone who lives in the bustling city of Colombo, right? And just surrounded by four walls their entire life, they get to do so many merits. Just washing and drying, and say like washing the alms bowl, handing Pirikara. For us, it's something that happens very often. But for this child, it opens their eyes. They feel so fortunate. Oh, additionally, the food they offered us was red rice with aubergines and dal curry. That's not our normal menu. Our normal menu is what? Dal, soya, and a salad. That's our normal menu. But this day it was special, right? Red rice, aubergine, and dal curry. And which could rival any other five-star buffet food. Now, I don't think this child is talking about the food. I think this child is talking about the feeling he felt while having the food. Because remember, this food that was prepared, right? So, say a five-star restaurant, right? The food's prepared by the chef, right? Like, you know, with Michelin stars and all this stuff. But one thing our monastery will always have is the love and kindness, the compassion. Now, we can all agree that, you know, sometimes mistakes happen. But no matter the mistake, no matter what food, the kindness, the compassion is always there. You know, made by our wonderful Anagarikas, wonderful Sita Shravikas, Shravikas, who, without looking at the time, without looking at how tired they are, will help prepare. And again, under the supervision of monks. All of these are creating this amazing environment. So even red rice, think about this, right? Let's not forget, we're talking about children that go to international school. Red rice and aubergines. Red rice and aubergines. Is that what they normally would eat? No, it doesn't matter what food, no matter the food. It is the love and compassion that comes from the people who make it. That's what makes it special. Also, we were fortunate enough to take a tour around the astonishing monastery and caught sight of a water project, the water project, and the construction of new buildings to provide accommodation to the growing number of monks, Anagarikas, and Angarikas. There was also a place for children, and upon entering it, I found it was very clean and tidy, making me feel that I stepped into another world. So this is talking about the noble hearts. So these RI children, they were able to go around the monastery, and they were able to go to our noble hearts and our LB juniors and all these places. And so it says here, I found it very clean and tidy, making me feel like I stepped into another world. Step into another world. I mean, just imagine what that child is feeling. He probably compared it to his own room, thinking, this is my room's like this, right? And it's just one person. Here, there's so many people, and this place is really tidy, really clean. And I don't think it's just, again, behind these words, I feel there are so much more. It's not just about the clean and tidy nature. It's about what? The people there as well. Clean and tidy in their hearts and minds. And it says the climate too differs quite rapidly from scorching heat to heavy, chilling rain. We had a challenging route to take. To visit the monastery in heavy rain, but we successfully completed the adventurous journey through witnessing a pagoda, the Bo Tree, and some more religious places. The visit to the Jetavanarama Buddhist Monastery was finite, but it had everlasting peace and calmness on my mind. As the monastery disappeared behind the mist, I felt that the visit was not just ordinary, a lesson for my mind and soul to nurture the peace within me. We left the monastery on a bus during a heavy cat and dog rain, but I promised myself I would return again, a promise that will stay, that stayed with me. From the Royal International School, Grade 7, Cambridge. And today they are able to come and give a dakineyu. Oh, and this is what? What is this? What is this? The Buddha Mandira. Just remember, it's not the plants, it's not the buildings, it's not the food, definitely not the food. It's the what? It's the environment. It's the environment that keeps, you know, this feeling of peace, this feeling of love. See, no matter who comes in the monastery, right, the first thing, whenever I get talked to them, they say, you know, this monastery, you know, the moment I step through the gates, I feel different. I mean, does it mean, like, does the floor change? Right? Are you stepping from, like, a road to a cloud? Is that why you feel different? No, they feel it because they look around, they see this environment. Again, environment not meaning trees and greenery. For example, in front of the Dhamma Hall, there is very little green. Mostly gray. Gray and white, right? No clothes. You see, this is the thing. The environment is the most important part. Because the environment is what attracts merits. The environment is what attracts your teachers. The environment is what keeps you doing these things. For example, you know, when you're at a party, right, for some of you remember many, many years back, the last time you went to a party, yeah? When you're at the party, you behave the way the party is. You know, if everyone's really, really excited, you automatically feel what? Really excited. For why? You don't know a reason, you just feel excited. But let's say it's a very boring party. Automatically, you feel what? Bored. Not because of anything. If you ask, you know, like, why do you feel bored? You'd be like, I just feel it. Because that's the environment. This is why your environment is really important. This is why environment is the glue that keeps you bound to this journey. Now, the environment is, again, it's not where. It's not the place. It's not the place. It's not the bricks. It's not the trees or anything. It's the people you associate. Or the minds you associate. The minds you associate. If you associate minds that are conducive to your nibbana, understand your environment is perfect. Now, when we talk about minds, we're not just talking about yours. We're not talking about everyone else's. We're talking about our minds as well. This is why, you know, we have these you know, what we call pratipadava, or they're not, it's not the Dhamma. I mean, if you think about this, the Dhamma is very, very simple. You learn anicca, you learn dukkha, you learn anatta. That's it. Full stop. Done. Gone. See, learning Dhamma is one thing. Putting it into your own life requires what? Requires the perfect environment. You know, you can probably teach a parrot. right? You can say parrot, right? Anicca means anicca, say anicca. Parrot will say anicca. Right? Say it means cause and effect. Then the parrot will say anicca means cause and effect. Well done, parrot. Parrot understands anicca. I mean, anyone can learn the Dhamma. Like, in school we've learned many, many theories. We've learned science, we learned English, we learned all these things. But how many of them do we actually put into our lives? We don't. Because we throughout our schooling careers, or schooling life, what we've learned is learn theories. Learn as many theories as you possibly can. And, use it regurgitate everything that you remember on tests. That's what we've learned. But very little do we actually put what we've understood into practice. And that's what pratipada is. Or pratipada meaning the environment. That's what the environment is. That's why the environment is so useful. It's what keeps you on this track. Now, something that I remember explaining to you many months ago, is to have, pratipada is these borders that stops you from going off path. I would like to change that. Pratipada is not the borders. Pratipada is not the borders that help you to keep on path, on track. Pratipada itself is the what? Is the path. The Dhamma is the energy, but the Pratipada is the path. So there's no point of just having a path without the energy. But there's no point of having energy without a path. You are very lucky, each and every one of you are very lucky to have a teacher. Because the opposite of pratipada is your comfort zone. The opposite of pratipada is your comfort zone. Because when you're in your comfort zone, pratipada or your journey to nibbana is slowed down. But when you are outside your comfort zone and on this path, you are now accelerating. You're not actually, it's like this. The longer you stay on the path of pratipada, the faster you become. It's exponential. The longer you stay, the faster it becomes. Because the pratipada, what I mean by pratipada, it's talking about the environment. It's talking only about this environment. See, I'd like you to think about this, right? Unfortunately, the more and more we stay in our comfort zones, the more and more things outside our comfort zones become, things that we don't like. For example, it's our comfort zone to stay in bed. Especially these days where it's raining, right? These days it rains in the morning. Is it hot? When it's raining, you have two choices. Choice A is what? To wake up and go onto the path. Choice B is what? It's raining. The sound. The cold. It's the perfect environment to go back to what? Sleep. It's the perfect environment to go back to sleep. We love the rain. And you can choose to stay in your comfort zone. However, by taking your steps out and going on this path, you know, it's raining heavily, right? Let's say, like, for example, our monks on a Anagarika class have to wake up at 4 in the morning. Sometimes at 4 in the morning, it starts to rain. But yet, our monks and Anagarikas will wake up. You know, some people may feel like, you know, they're tearing themselves from that bed. But they'll do it. Because now they have something. Now when they're walking this path, they have something to contemplate on. What's that? No, the bed. I really enjoy sleeping when it's raining. Why is that? No, even simple things like, yeah, let's say you're given a responsibility. You're given a responsibility. And that gives you the chance or the ability to cut corners. To cut some corners. So for example, let's say, like, you know, you remember when you're at school, when you're given a prefect, prefects are allowed to do what? You're allowed to, legally, right? The school gives you complete freedom to skip classes because you have your responsibilities. Like that, do you feel the same thing? You know, let's say you have the Buddha Puja. Do you want to cut corners and say, you know, I have to do this. So today, you know, I'm not going to be able to stay for the whole Buddha Puja. And do you enjoy staying in your comfort zone? Or let's say, you know, you're someone who really doesn't like to, you know, help another person. Of course, none of you like that. All of you are people who love helping one another. But if your comfort zone is not helping, stepping outside of your comfort zone is difficult. But you can only step outside when you're in the environment. For example, coming back to sleeping in the rain. If you're someone whose comfort zone is sleeping in the rain, the only way you can come out of this is only if you have the environment of what? Of noble association. Or of a noble environment. For example, in the monastery, surrounded by people who will push you further. So even though, say, it's a 4, you know, it starts raining at 4. It starts raining at 4. So you're like, so you wake up and you think, you know, it's raining. I'd rather stay in bed. At 4:01, someone comes and taps you and says, wake up. And you say, okay, I'll wake up, but you fall back. At 4:02, someone else comes up and taps. Wake up. It's 4:02. We have to go. And you say, I'll come. Just give me a minute. At 4:03, someone else knocks. Now you're surrounded by what? The noble environment. From 4:01 to 4:05. Let's say you get tapped. And after that, you think, they're not going to let me sleep. I'm going to have to what? Come out of what? My comfort zone. So to break your comfort zone, all you need is what? The noble environment, noble association. Let's say, for example, you have a very strong attachment. Or, you know, for example, you know, when you're at home, who's in charge of your fridge? When you're at home, who's in charge of your fridge? You are. So you can go and open it and close it however many times you like. But let's say you are in the noble environment, at the monastery. It's a very hot day, and you're craving for ice cream. What are you going to do now? Will you walk to the nearest fridge and open the fridge and see if there's ice cream? No, you now realize, well, I am craving for what? Ice cream. I can't, I know. my you know, the environment doesn't let me go and you know, take it out of the fridge. So I'm not going to be able to get it. So now you have the, now you're on the path to what? Contemplate. For example, for our Anagarikas and monks and Anagarikas, and also especially even our Sila Shravikas, Shravikas as well. But for our monks and Anagarikas, I know, right? If you want a new piece of soap, there's a specific person you have to ask. And they won't give it to you unless it's a specific time. So it'll be Thursdays from, I don't know, 7 to 8. Now, this is something that, again, is part of the noble association. Now you have to ask. Now, asking another person, what does it make your ego feel? I have to ask? Can't they leave like some out there and I can just take one and go? I don't need to ask, but no, I have to ask because why? My ego is what? Why am I asking? Again, you're under the guiding eyes of who? Of your teachers. You're under you're surrounded by this noble environment. You're surrounded by this environment that keeps you stuck. Keeps you glued to what? Nibbana. Keeps you glued to Nibbana. See, even in the rain, whether it's raining, whether it's, you know, it's scorching hot, for as long as you're in the noble environment, for as long as you're surrounded by noble people, for as long as you're a Kalyana Mitra to yourself and other people, you are going on the right path. It's certain. For as long as you have the merits, you have a teacher, and for as long as you're in the right environment, you are guaranteed to attain Nibbana. Because a common thing you can ask is, who is attaining Nibbana? Who is attaining Nibbana? No one is attaining Nibbana. Nibbana is also what? Cause and effect. Put the cause together, the effect will happen. The effect will happen. Think about this. Let's say, our Sila Shravakas, Shravikas, our monks, Anagarikas, Anagarikas, we all have this, right? You know, we have our doctrines. Let's say you're someone who doesn't contemplate, you know, isn't used to contemplating, but you're given the chance to give a doctrine. Now, can you stop from contemplating? It's almost as if you're stuck onto a chair and they're saying, you have to contemplate now. Forcing you to contemplate. But it's very easy to say, you know what, today I can't do it. I have a cough, I can't do it today. I'm a bit under the weather, I can't do it today. It's very easy to stay in this comfort zone. So even though you're surrounded by your teachers and surrounded by merit, you don't have the right environment. You know, that's why, you know, see if you find yourself really reluctant to, when it's your turn to give the nyaya, see if you find yourself, you know, stepping about a bit back and saying, you know, I can't do it. Can we give someone else a chance? Because if that's so, you're not giving yourself the noble environment. See, those of you who constantly are at the monastery, think about it. When can you not do merits? Like, when is the last time you thought, you know what, I'm not going to do a single merit today? You can't. You see someone sweeping, and they say, Mahatma, can you help me sweep? Mahatma, can you help me do this? What are they doing? They're forcing you to do what? Merits. Now, of course, again, it's in the mind, it's in the mind, so you can think, oh my God, I have to help this person. And still, you're doing something, which even though at that moment you may be thinking, oh, I don't want to do this, later, that's a stimulus for you to again feel joy. I remember that this Mahatya had helped me to do this merit, and therefore I did a merit. Again, that's what? Noble environment. If you don't have a noble environment, if you are not in the noble environment, the question is Nirvana possible? Even for the Buddha. For the Buddha to become the Buddha, right? For the ascetic Gautama or the Bodhisattva to become the Buddha, he also had what? Noble environment. From the day he received his prophecy to the last day he offered, for the last life that he offered his own children, he was surrounded by what? Noble association. Surrounded by people. Surrounded by the mindset. So even if the Buddha needed noble, even if the Buddha needed noble, the noble environment, what about you? Let yourself be immersed in this noble environment, even though it may go against your own, it may go against your own comfort zones. Let the noble association, let the noble environment just seep in. Because remember, at the end of the day, because if you really think about noble, your comfort zone, if you think about your comfort zone, this is a place that you like being. For how long? For how long do you want to stay in your comfort zone? Because remember, you can only stay in your comfort zone for as long as you're alive. You can only stay in your comfort zone for as long as you're alive. The moment after you pass away, can you stay in your comfort zones? You know, luckily we're humans, because we are able to change our vipaka. We're able to change our thinking patterns, so we are able to stay in what we find comfortable. But let's say you become a Gandhava. So you become a preta, right? A hungry ghost, a ghost in general. Now what? Now you're exposed to the elements. Wherever your vipaka takes you, you have to go. If they say, okay, you're now going here, unfortunately, whether you like it or not, you're going to have to go there. From today onwards, you're going to have to eat feces. Now what? Whether you like it or not, you're going to have to do it. So whether you like it or not, you know, you have to understand, you know, our comfort zone is a place that we enjoy, a place that we love. But it's stopping us from going forth, from taking the next step, from taking a hop, a skip and a jump towards Nibbana. That's why the noble environment is so important. Again, let me reemphasize, it's not a building. Right? So when we talk about the noble environment, it doesn't mean this building. It doesn't mean the trees, the floor, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean the people either. Noble association is not about people. It's about the mind. The attitudes. You need those attitudes. Without those attitudes, Nibbana can't happen. So I really do want you to think about this. Think about the environment that you're in. How can you change your environment for you to, you know, become better? For it to be more conducive? For you to be able to to keep going forth, where do you stop at your comfort zone? Break it. Whenever you feel that you are, you know, you're currently in your comfort zone, break it. Find a way to break it. Whenever you feel at ease with, you know, with everything that you do, break it. Tell your teacher and say, you know, I feel really, I feel that I'm really comfortable here. See, I feel really comfortable waking up at 4 o'clock. You know, waking up at 4 o'clock is in my comfort zone. What will your teachers do? No, from tomorrow onwards, why not wake up at 3? Or from tomorrow onwards, why not wake up at 5? To keep you on your toes, to break you out of your comfort zone. You know, I don't like going to Buddha Puja. I like coming to the Buddha Puja. If either one of these are in your comfort zones, you know, break out of it. Because an arahant is someone who doesn't like nor dislike. Doesn't like nor dislike. He's someone who's okay with anything. So if you say, Arahant Mahanse, you have to go and pin the bata. Okay. You have to go to this dana. Okay. You have to do the Buddha Puja. Okay. You have to stay in a room in complete silence in the dark. No, not the dark. Please, not the dark. No, okay. So if you start to feel yourself settling in and enjoying one thing, understand you are falling into your own comfort zone. And that will become your own demise. Today we don't have much time, so I do briefly want to talk about something really interesting as well. So remember, noble association, your noble environment, that's number one. Something else I really wanted to talk about was we normally feel, thanks to ignorance and attachment, we normally feel that things are there. That things are there. I have this thing, I have that thing. We feel that things are, you know, not only there, but are constantly there, that are fixed. But that has great faults. So the other day, I was in the Buddha Mandir, right? The Buddha Shrine Room. And for you that know, we have to chant the Etipi Sogata in that. I remember I was holding this, and on the door it says, before leaving, to hand the thing over before leaving. Now, okay, I see. What I'm going to tell you right now, societally doesn't make sense. Well, societally makes sense, but when it comes to the 3D world, there are questions. So imagine you're holding the spirit thread, right? You're holding the spirit thread and you're chanting the Buddha Guna. If you hold the wood, does it count? If you hold, so the spirit threads are surrounding this. If you hold the two woods on both sides, does it count? If you leave it on your cloth, if you leave it on your clothes, does it count? If you let it go, it's wrong. But if you leave it on your clothes, does it count or not? See, when you come to start thinking about a 3D world, there are some things that you have to really, 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 really be aware. For example, the chairs that you sat on. Everyone's sitting on a chair. So myself is also sitting on a chair. Are you actually sat on a chair? If you think about this, right? If everyone was to lean back, all you can feel is what? Something that's supporting your lower half and something that's supporting your back. If you're not using the two armrests, are the armrests, I don't know, does that chair have armrests? Unless you look down, it does. When you look down, it does. But when you don't, it doesn't. So if you're not touching anything, so if you're not leaning back, and if you're not touching the two sides or anything, technically you could be sat on a stool, but you wouldn't know. You're sat on a stool. Because your mind perceives only what is there at that moment. But you look around and you think, oh, it's back. There's two armrests. There's four legs. How do you know your chair has four legs? Without looking at your chairs, how do you know your chair has four legs? You don't. But yeah, you perceive what? I'm sat on that chair that you know, I saw the chair, and I saw four legs, I saw a back, I saw this, and you're using your memory to construct it. Again, that doesn't mean that this doesn't have four legs, doesn't have a back, it's not a stool, it's a chair. But what you remember is this is your perception. This pen. When was the last time you used a whiteboard pen? When was the last time you used a whiteboard pen? Now, different people have different answers. When you say whiteboard pen, what part is the whiteboard pen and what part is not the whiteboard pen? How do you say, which one is the different, which one is, how do you separate whiteboard pen and not whiteboard pen? For example, this is the whiteboard pen, right? This is the whiteboard pen's lid. When you put it together, this is all the whiteboard pen. When you take this part off, and let's say you find this on the street, do you say this is a whiteboard pen? Do you say this is a whiteboard pen? No, you say this is a part of it, not the whiteboard pen. If I was to take this ink thingy out, now which part is the whiteboard pen? Which part is the whiteboard pen? So where does the whiteboard pen start and stop? Is this part the whiteboard pen? But when I write, is that part of the whiteboard pen, not part of the whiteboard pen? See, we give ourselves these boundaries and we say, you know, this structure is what we call the whiteboard pen. This structure is the whiteboard pen. But is it really? Okay, I take this pen and I bend this stick this way. So it's now it looks like this. Is it still a whiteboard pen or not? You will still call it whiteboard pen. Because we've given ourselves boundaries and said, okay, anything that has four legs and a tabletop is called a what? Four legs and a piece of wooden top, we call it what? Table. So if you ever see something with four legs and a tabletop, you call it what? A table. But let's say it's now, three legs and a tabletop. Three legs and a piece of wood on top. Now you call it what? You still call it a table. You still call it a table. However, you call this a different table. You feel this to be different. Because your first idea of a table is what? four legs. Now if you see a table with three legs, it feels different. And some will argue and say, this feels more what? Valuable. That's why, your tables with one leg, people say it looks really nice, looks really different, looks really special. Because in our heads, we've keeping the boundary that four legs and a piece of wooden top is called a table. So anything that differs slightly gives it a bit more value. But if we take the same thing and we add another piece of wood on top here, we call this what? A chair. Four legs, a back, we call what? A chair. A piece of wood horizontally and a piece of wood vertically, we call what? A chair. So even if the back looks weird, you still call it what? Because we have a boundaries and we say anything that looks like this, we call it what? A chair. Now that's fine. That's fine. Is it wrong to call this a chair? Is it wrong to call this a chair? No, that's your memory. Your memory and your silence, your sanya, that has grouped like things together and said, these are all like that. However, because of ignorance and attachment, if you see it, if you see a plain chair and a chair with a fancy back and curved handles, right, armrests, you automatically feel what? You automatically feel what? This is different. This is a bit different. The legs, look at the legs, they're different. The back is a bit different. It looks a bit more comfortable. It looks a bit, more special. That part comes from where? That part comes from where? That part comes from ignorance. That part comes from jati. Because these both could be made from the exact same thing. But you feeling one of them is different from the other, that is ignorance. Because all I have to do is take this bit off, and now it's a stool. Make this a bit longer, and now it's a table. Move these legs a bit further out, and put a mattress on top, we call that a bed. Same thing in different arrangements, we give it different names because of these borders that we give. Giving names is not the problem. The problem is that you think that this is how it is. This is the bed, this is the bed's leg, this is the bed's top. Move this leg a bit this way, now you're going to change it and say it's no longer the bed's leg, now it's the chair's leg. Now it's the table's leg. We fall into this trap that saying that everything is supposed to be like this. Everything is like this and everything is fixed. Everything is fixed. That's why if it's raining, some people think that, yesterday it rained, the day before yesterday it rained, so today it's going to what? It's going to rain. So if it suddenly starts raining, instead of raining water, it starts raining food. Now what? This can't be. It can't rain food. It's raining tacos. It can't be. That can't be, you know, it can't be raining food, that's impossible. And now your mind is going into the state of, that can't be, it's impossible. That's because you thought what? Rain is what? Fixed. Rain will always be like this. Now, of course, raining food is a bit extreme, but still, for an arahant, whether it's raining water or raining, I don't know, potatoes, would the arahant care? Will they feel a difference? No, they may even like state that it's raining potatoes, but they won't feel that, you know, this is something really weird. They can compare and say, you know, this raining potatoes doesn't really happen. That's comparing. But this feeling of, oh, whoa, this is weird, this is different, I don't like it, I like it, comes from what? Ignorance and attachment. See, when you look around, we already have a, you know, we always look at something and we already think of it to be some sort of way. Already we think of it to be some sort of way. For example, I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, some people can make cake that looks lifelike. You know, they make a cake that looks like, I remember, you know, I remember seeing someone make a cake that looks exactly like a person. It looks exactly like a person. Their skin is icing, their hair is also icing, but from a distance it looks like a person. So when you come close and it looks like a person, but you know the person breaks off an arm and gives the arm to you and says, you know, it's cake. Now you feel that to be really weird, like strange, that's not right. Where does that come from? It's weird eating an arm. No, it's cake in the shape of an arm. But why does it feel weird? It's in the mind, in the illusion. It's an illusion. This is the thing, understanding anicca dukkha anatta is fine, it's easy. Like I said, a parrot can understand it, or a parrot can repeat it. Polly say anicca dukkha anatta, Polly will say anicca dukkha anatta. But to put it into our lives, you need the three things. Merits, a teacher, and the environment. Something that animals don't have. Something that, you know, billions of people in this world don't have. Something that you all have. Which makes you the most valuable people on earth. So today we have Dakineyo. We have Dakineyo done by our Royal Institute School. Now these people are... This school is one of the most, I would like to say, is one of the most amazing schools because they are always helping. They constantly help with our school, the Nova International School. Like every now and then, the students will go to their school and then the school will let them do some experiments they have to learn and whatnot. So the Royal International School, the Royal Institute School, International School, has done so much. And this is why, you know, today it's their Dakineyo. So it's their time to do so much merits. Again, Dakineyo for us comes every 2 weeks. But for others, it's once in a lifetime. But for us as well, it's also what? Once every? Dakineyo comes once every? Once every mind. We feel, because of Jati, that it comes every 2 weeks, you know. Last week we had, or the week before we had Vesak, right? And the week before that we had another one and whatnot. But Dakineyo comes for us as well. Once every mind. The mind perceives it and then passes away for the next one. So even though, you know, this is the thing. Whenever you get a chance, especially all of you, if you can talk to these children, give them your association. It can be as simple as a smile. Or as simple as, oh, Buddha, how are you? That's enough for them to feel what? This place is different. The moment I enter this place, it feels different. A place where there's so much peace, no suffering can squeeze through. A place which you can call paradise. Comes from what? Comes from you. Comes from all of you. So if you do get a chance, talk to them, smile, and give them your love and compassion. Not just them, but everyone. Everyone. Okay. Let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits required by making offerings to the infinite virtues and noble gem. Chanting Pirith, Lutan Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today is the first and foremost. Let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the Dhamma. As well as take a moment to transfer merits to all the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, including all chief plates of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and commit themselves to the benefit of all sentient beings. Not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. As well as take a moment to transfer merits to all those, as well as take a moment to transfer merits to Gurus and Anansi, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by translating them and sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them be born in the worthy plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in blissful plains. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss and nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits required to our devotees, friends of the monastery, for sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, those of you who provide the Sangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how, extend their well wishes, may through the power of the merits, if anything be born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain, may by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer our merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, our nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sourcing one chance of merits to the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons. Primarily the Sakodeva as well as Nima's gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. This will also take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us, keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This will also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that has been friends and family to us in this long journey of samsara. This will also take a moment to transfer merits to the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost life in the war be the friend of foe, rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey of samsara. May the power of merits, if any of them are born in the world of plains, may they redeem themselves and born in the blessed plain. May the power of merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. And finally, as all resolved, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired today. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nuvansis, Arhat Mahin Nuvansis in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired today. May you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arhat Nuvansi or Arhat Mahin Nuvansi in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of Chipuchan be with you all. The Mahasangha now transfer the blessings to you. Raga ginnin midetnva
dvesha ghinnen midetva moha ghinnen midetva nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva mamada siyalu loka siyalu sattvayo nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva raga ghini niveva dvesha ghini niveva moha ghini niveva nivan sapa labeva nivan sapa labeva nivan sapa labeva
tunwange susyananta mahaguna belin siloka sisatyoma nibhan bhamasaken sutra sadu sadu.